Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
FM News Talk 97.1.
That is exactly what I needed to hear.
Thank God someone here knows what they're talking about.
That's American
Rap. All right, you need to take the time and get the full picture.
Don't get me wrong, I love the ladies. I mean, they rev my engine, but they don't belong in the newsroom. It is Anchor Man, not Anchor Lady.
Goodness sake, kid. Keep your voice down. Your father's listening to the radio.
I'm not America's sweetheart.
This is the Annie Fry Show.
There are a lot of friends who I had to really get rid of because they are so nonsensical. When it comes to this issue, they have the whole every single talking point that they hear on state TV and that they hear from this president. They repeat it and they are blinded by it. And I had to get rid of them. And I don't know if after this I will ever be able to go back and be friends with those people, because at a certain point you just say they're too far gone and I got to let them go. And if they're willing to come back and if they're willing to live in reality, then I would welcome them with open arms.
Wow, Don Lemon. I don't really know if you understand who the real winners in this scenario actually are. My goodness. Gabe Pfeiffer joining us as he does every Friday.
Yeah, I'm a freaking genius.
Okay, so you're a rocket scientist.
Brilliant!
Knowledge is power.
So, Gabe, did you hear Don Lemon there? I guess Democrats explaining how it's going to be going forward. Have you had anybody like just straight up cut you out of their life because you think differently? Have you cut anybody out of your life because they think differently?
I definitely have not done any cutting. If somebody has cut me out of their lives, I don't know. Partially just because
jokes on them.
I'm like I say all the time, I'm kind of the introvert. You know, I need the extroverts to kind of come and get me. So, you know, I'm usually not very outgoing in terms of trying to contact, you know, long lost friends and whatnot. So, if it's been a while and we haven't talked lately and they see something on my Facebook page they don't like and they unfriended me, I can't tell. But, Don Lemon there is given the standard playbook assignment there for the left right now is to cut out all of the quote unquote unreasonable people on the other side, as opposed to, at least attempting to understand the reasoning on the other side. I mean, and it's actually not that hard. I think right-leaning people tend to do it more often with left-leaning people. And because of that, we kind of see them as, well-meaning but mistaken. But the left, when they look at us, they see us as either stupid or evil or some combination of both.
Yeah, I think that this understanding of who we are, like I always like to talk about your Thanksgiving dinner table Democrats. If the majority of us here probably are somewhere moderate to very far right of moderate, We have a lot of people listening right now who aren't that way. And I know that Don Lemon doesn't speak for Democrats. Don Lemon isn't, you know, a carbon copy of every other Democrat that's out there. Just like Sean Hannity isn't the carbon copy of every Republican that is out there. There is a diversity that exists among both of these parties. But the people who make their living, and, you know, I would say to like it just an infinitesimally fraction of a bit, you probably would say, Annie, you're somebody who makes their living from this. But these big names like Don Lemon, who are just willing to cut swaths of people out of their lives because they think differently. And you and I know that the way he approaches this issue and the way he approaches this scenario is an uneducated approach. Don Lemon doesn't know me. He doesn't know you. Don Lemon doesn't know you, Ryan. He doesn't understand why you might vote for Donald Trump. But, you know, if you're not willing to, like, listen to this one more time, because it's really,
there are a lot of friends who I had to really get rid of because they are so nonsensical when it comes to this issue. They have every single talking point that they hear on state TV and that they hear from this president, they repeat it and they are blinded by it. And I had to get rid of them. And I don't know if after this I will ever be able to go back and be friends with those people, because at a certain point you just say they're too far gone and I got to let them go. And if they're willing to come back and if they're willing to live in reality, then I will welcome them with open arms.
If they're willing to come back and live in reality, I mean, whose reality? Don Lemon's reality, Ryan? Like, there's no interest. This idea of being liberal and open-minded, that's like I feel like what the 90s were, the post Ronald Reagan era of, you know, everything being Alex P. Keaton kind of buttoned up Ronald Reagan-esque type of Republican. Then you had Bill Clinton, and let's be honest, Bill Clinton kind of shook the dust off of the Ronald Reagan, you know, straight and narrow path, and, you know, carry on with that. But I mean, you've got this implication here that Don Lemon is living in reality and these Trump supporters aren't.
Yeah. Yeah. The little nugget in there that I'm surprised that he dropped is state run media or state TV.
Like, that's the one that everyone's watching, which is not MSNBC.
Yeah, like, what is he referring to? Like, whitehouse.gov, as if that's where people go to everybody gets their news from whitehouse.gov. You know, if there's any party-affiliated media, we just got done listening to the Trump rally. He's railing against Fox. Fox isn't supporting him in the way that he wants. So if there is state-run media, he's literally on it, broadcasting from it, and claiming that everybody else is a puppet.
Crappy state-run media.
Yeah, really. I mean,
it's... Yeah, doing it wrong.
That's 2020. That's where we are, right?
Yeah, I suppose. Let's listen to David Axelrod and what he has to say about turnout.
If you
turnout.
Look deeply into these numbers, is that where the fall-off is appears to be among African-American voters, you know, and that is a concern.
So a concern that we have Republicans outpacing Democrats in Florida. Gabe, I hate polls. I think polls are put out there because they're meant to, it's like a buffet. You can put together a plate of food from one buffet that you just adore and love, and you could put a plate, somebody could put a plate of food together for you and you won't touch a single thing. It's the same buffet. I think people select and they try to narrate the story that they want to tell. And I think that it really sets people up for great heartbreak. And I'm just not into that. So I would rather stay kind of even keeled and not get my expectations too high and not get my anxiety too low and wait and see what happens. But what about you? There's so much information that's out there and it's easy to get caught up and wrapped up into it. What's your take on the polls?
Basically, I try to take every poll with a grain of salt. You know, I don't want to get bogged down in looking deeply into the methodology and the numbers breakdowns and all of the, you know, because you can really get into that stuff. You can start, you know, running your own sequential numbers, standard deviations from the mean and all these other things. But, you know, ultimately, you know, it's kind of like the way we treat science right now, as though it's some sort of magical, predictive, and solid religious order, essentially. And we're getting information from the God of the universe kind of thing here, and it's therefore that trustworthy. But really, you know, science doesn't say anything. Scientists do. Mm-hmm. You know, science is a methodology. So in the same way, you know, polling is a methodology for determining, you know, the direction of public opinion and things like that. But pollsters are the ones who actually make those conclusions. They're the ones who craft the way we get into this, that information. And it can all be for naught, ultimately, as we saw in 2016.
Well, I want to get to a phone call. We've got somebody holding, and it's Jay, who is a former teacher of mine, actually probably the person most responsible for stoking my interest in politics. So either credit or blame Mr. Lindsay here. But it's so great to talk to you. Thank you for calling in. How are you doing?
Oh, my pleasure, Annie. I'm doing okay. Trying to be a school principal in the middle of a pandemic is not a fun thing, but yeah. We're all facing those issues. So.
Soldiering on. So what's on your mind?
You know, I want to let you know that things in Wisconsin really are an awful lot like Illinois right now. There's two regions, Madison and Milwaukee, of course, that are quite liberal-leaning, and the rest of the state is pretty solidly conservative. Based on, you know, I talk to principals and teachers all over the state on a fairly regular basis. I think Trump's going to ultimately carry the state. Mm. It is going to be close, you know, a couple of percentage points probably. But the biggest strike is against Biden right now is his push for lockdowns. And our state, I can't speak for all states, but our state is sick and tired of that mantra. And they've been very resistant to the start. And yes, we are suffering from it. Our numbers have been quite high in national news in some cases. But I can tell you on the ground, we're still getting it done. Our schools are still open. Our businesses are still open. You know, everybody is finding a good way to cope. And to imply that more draconian measures are needed is not sitting well with the folks outside of Madison and Milwaukee. So I think you can end up putting Trump in the win column here in Wisconsin, but it will be close.
Yeah, I can't wait. It's a big one. Wisconsin is a big state. You know, you were in Illinois for quite some time, and there's no play here. There are no Trump rallies here because Chicago has its way with the rest of us. Your school principal, are you guys able to be in session right now? Are the kids in school?
Yeah, we are. A vast majority of the schools in Wisconsin are still open with in-person instruction. Some do hybrid, whatever. We've been able to stay open. I've only had one case amongst my staff and students, and you know, we've got some kids in quarantine, but we're doing well. You know, teachers and school children, I can't give our kids enough credit, and I imagine there's a lot of teachers and principals around the country who feel the same way. There was a lot of worry and concern and, you know, emotional impact on kids wearing masks and blah, 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 blah. These kids are resilient. We got to give them more credit, and teachers are resilient and deserve a lot of kudos for the way they've just on the fly completely reinvented how we do schools, and I'm very proud of all of them.
We're speaking with Mr. Lindsay. He's a teacher. I almost called you a professor. A teacher of mine. He's pretty much a professor. When I was in high school, taught me my honors American history when I was a junior in high school. And now he is a principal in Wisconsin. Do you I've heard a lot of suggestions from the pro shutdowners that talk about teachers and how it's dangerous for them to be in the classroom, and, you know, this advocacy on behalf of teachers that shutdowns would be better. And, you know, I know a few teachers, and doing remote learning is kind of a nightmare, and everything that they have set up seems to be not for remote learning. I'm just wondering what your take is on, at least from the teacher's standpoint, the ability to be in the classroom with the kids and modifying on that case-by-case basis like you listed. Is there an emphasized value in that in-person on the teacher's perspective?
In a vast majority of the teachers that I deal with from my own staff and others in the area and in the family and around the country that I've had contact with, it's wholeheartedly in support of in-person education. There's just too much lost when you try to do things virtually. And I'll be honest, when we were shut down last spring, It was my wife's a teacher in the school, and you know, teaches fourth grade, and she worked 17 times harder doing all virtual than she works hard, believe me, just doing in person. So teachers are more realistic about it. I mean, I suppose there's risk, but a vast majority of the teachers I talk to on a regular basis, they're all about the kids, and it's what's best for the kids. And if there's going to be some risk and we take the proper precautions, they want to be here. They love their kids, and we couldn't stand being away. We were away from our kids 6 months, and that was just – it was awful. That's not why we got into teaching. That's not why we got into this line of work. We want to spend time with kids. We want to make a difference in their life, and you just can't do it virtually, not as well.
Mr. Lindsay, so great to talk to you. Thank you for reporting to us live from Wisconsin. Hope you guys are doing well, and we're counting on you, especially from us in Illinois, to do your part in that electoral college, because you know how things go down here. Great to talk to you, and tell everybody we said hello.
Hey, remind your husband he married way out of his league, all right?
I do every day. No, not at all.
Good morning,
husband. Yeah, this is your daily reminder. We'll talk to you soon. That's Mr. Lindsay's, my junior honors American history teacher. And I'm going to tell you the exercise that he did with us when we were juniors in high school that really opened my eyes to politics. We're going to take a quick break. And we're going to be back with more conversation here in just a minute. We've got Gabe, Carl, and we've got Ryan in here. Carl's telling me to stretch, which before your signal to me looked like break. So
I'm sorry. No, it's the gremlins got in the studio.
There's a message down there that says keep going. So
it
when I
Halloween.
Go, let's take a break, that makes people in the studio just lose their minds. I will tell you this story right now. I wish I would have kept Mr. Lindsay on the phone because it was 2000 when I was a junior in high school. I was in Honors American History, and the exercise, I've told this story before, but I'm going to tell it again. The exercise that we were supposed to do was he split the class in half. And 2000, if you remember, an election year, was kind of a historic election year. That was George W. Bush, and that was Al Gore. So here's what we had to do. He split us in half. I went to the Lutheran High School in Edwardsville. So we had small classrooms. I think we maybe had like 18 kids in this class. Split them in half. And one half was supposed to learn and represent Al Gore's platform, and one half was supposed to learn and represent George W. Bush's platform. You're supposed to then he gave each of us, each team, the person who was going to participate in an actual debate, and we were in high school, in an actual debate in front of a bunch of grade school or junior high kids who were going to come in and listen to our debate and then cast a ballot after they left. The key here was that, and I'll tell you, I got appointed to be George W. Bush in this debate. So I had a team that was prepping me to debate, and then I had to debate questions as they were thrown at me against Gretchen, who was supposed to be Al Gore.
Gretchen,
and that Gretchen was very nice and a former teammate of mine on many sports teams, but we didn't get to tell them who we were representing. So it was like Annie and Gretchen. And they didn't know that if they voted, if I convinced them, they didn't know that they were voting for George Bush unless they were paying extra attention at home. If Gretchen convinced them, they didn't know they were casting a ballot for Al Gore. And it was so amazing to look at these platforms and understand, you know, like, oh, what do they think about education? What do they think about healthcare? What do they think about the military, defense? You know, all of these things. I was like, holy cow, there's a lot that actually goes into this. Like, this is more than, Mom, Dad, who do we vote for? Okay, check the R box. It was really, really, really helpful for me to dive in and see how much of a stark difference there is. And that difference still exists today. Even more so, I bet, now than it did in 2000. By the way, I won that debate, and George Bush eventually won that election. It took a while. It was really disappointing to, like, go through that whole process and go through election day and be like, oh, who's going to win? And it's like, you didn't know. It was crazy.
Well, now we know why George W. Bush won. So
it was you.
Yeah, it was me. It was all those Illinois junior high kids I got to vote for in the election. Yeah.
Well, it is Illinois. They could have voted hundreds of times.
I'll tell you when we come back. My most embarrassing vote that I've ever cast. And this is a tragedy that I have carried with me for many years. And I'm going to share that with you when we return. If Carl says that we can break now. Can we break now?
We can.
Awesome.
That vote better not have been for Gretchen.
Oh no. No, if she was running for Gretchen was way more popular than I was in high school. I was just happy to be George W. Bush. We'll be right back.
The Annie Fry Show is streaming online. Watch us live on YouTube and subscribe. You're listening to The Annie Fry Show. Find the podcast, on-demand audio, and more at 971talk.com/Annie. Talk lines are open now at 314-241-9797 or 866-455-9797. You're listening to The Annie Fry Show.
The year was 1988. I was 4 years old.
Share it. Preach it.
No.
No?
I'm confessing.
Oh.
The presidential race was on, and we had an election in our school. And for some crazy reason, they said to the 4-year-old preschool class, "You guys can vote too." So here is little 4-year-old Annie Fry, and maiden name Annie, and they have, I remember this, I like remember the way it smelled. The water table was over to my right, the easel that we painted on was over to my left, and the chair that the teacher, I believe it was Mrs. Royak, that she read stories to us from, was right past the voting booth that was made out of cardboard and painted, and it smelled like paint. There was a curtain that when you went into the cardboard ballot voting booth thing, you pulled the curtain back and you took your little 4-year-old self inside there, and there were two pictures staring back at you. Those pictures were of George Bush and Michael Dukakis. And beautiful. I'm looking at these two and I'm saying, well, this guy looks old. I'm going to vote for the other one. So I cast my first vote ever for Michael Dukakis.
Didn't we all?
As a 4-year-old in 4-year-old preschool inside a paint-scented cardboard box with a curtain on it. And I was so very proud. I had been heard. My voice had been shared. I was so excited. I was visibly shaking. I probably had to pee. And I left the ballot box and I went home that day and I said to my parents, "Mom and Dad, I voted today." And they were like, "Oh, that's wonderful. Who did you vote for?" And I'm like, "I don't know." And I didn't know what their name was because I was 4.
Couldn't read it.
And my father asks me, "Well, did you vote for George Bush or did you vote for Michael Dukakis?" And I said, "I don't know, Dad. Pictures there. And I just put my vote in for Michael Dukakis. Or I just put my vote in the one with the picture that I liked." And then he goes, "Well, here's the two pictures." And I pointed to Michael Dukakis. And my dad goes, "Annie, you voted for Michael Dukakis." I was like, "Yeah." I went to a Lutheran grade school. I was probably the only person there who voted for Michael Dukakis. The future conservative talk show host, Annie Fry, votes for Michael Dukakis. I was one of the only people who voted for him to begin with.
Funny story, that's who I wrote in this year.
It's unbelievable. And I remember him having this, like, all I remember about Michael Dukakis was that he had a full head of hair, and he looked significantly younger than this older guy. And that was all I needed. Is it that different for some 18-year-olds? I mean, if we had pictures, here's a real question for the room. If you had pictures of these candidates only, and people walked in and were going to vote on the picture, who would they vote for?
Ew. Neither of them look good.
They'd be probably different candidates. Yeah. It probably would have affected the primaries.
Kanye.
Ooh.
You had the, yeah, there you go. Yeah, that's true. You had the vice presidential candidates in there. I still think it's questionable. I don't know. That's how we did it in preschool, and that's how we did it. And then the other time, the other memory, great, like, establishing memory that I have of being a child was helping my dad in the yard. And we walked into the garage, and I just had the thought, like, I think we were helping in his garden. I'm like, well, why wouldn't it be better if we all just, like, supported each other and like with our garden we could share our food with people and they could share our things. And my dad looked at me, I was like 8 at that point, my dad looked at me and goes, Annie, you're a communist. And then he walked away. That was it. I was like 12 years old and I started to hear for the first time what a communist was. And I remember my dad calling me that. I wasn't ashamed. I had no shame. I didn't know. Yeah. I was 8.
When you're a
so
kid,
my two
exactly
formative times as a child is voting for Michael Dukakis as a 4-year-old and my dad telling me I was a communist when I was 8. So does it make more sense that I'm here now?
Yes.
Or less sense?
You're trying to please your father.
Oh.
Oh, well, no.
As I always say,
lay down on the couch. Tell me about
here
your
after
childhood.
After 2 when Rush gets off the air. So.
That's so funny.
Go. Go ahead, Gabe.
I was going to say, I wonder why they introduced voting for little kids that way. You know, I've noticed that in a lot of instances, they use like real elections. Like, why don't you have an election between like Elmo and Big Bird and just kind of play with it that way just to introduce the concept? So then you're not adding all of this potential familial strife into
it. If I found out that they were doing that in my kid, well, I mean, if my kids were in public school and they were doing that, I'd have a huge problem because I don't want them talking about that specifically to my children at all, which is one of the reasons why I send my kids to a Lutheran school. But, you know, I think the idea of voting and democracy and you know, talking about casting a ballot, I think that's a good thing. But it also, I think, in 1988 was extremely more harmless than it would be in the context of 2020. Gabe, what's your first memory of understanding the idea of voting or elections or political parties or anything? Do you have any formative experiences as a young person, or did it kind of take you to get to be an adult? Because I know September 11th was very impactful for you.
Yeah, September 11th, I kind of refer to as my political birthday, in that I kind of jumped feet first into the realities of the right-left dichotomy in America. But prior to that, I think the biggest impact of anything, because you know, it's the only thing that comes to mind, is how my dad hated Bill Clinton. it was really interesting too.
Like, you're
because,
really on this.
Every
dad.
Time he,
this is a big deal for you.
Yeah, yeah, because he'd come on. He, you know, Bill Clinton would come on TV, and my dad was like, "That guy's a liar. I hate that guy." Basically, yeah, I mean, not
there
so many words, but you know, he. He just, he had it in for that guy for a long time.
What about
so
you, Ryan?
That was kind of foremost.
Yeah, the year would have been 1992 because I remember standing at the water fountain at school and some little girl named Leah telling me how much she liked Ross Perot, which didn't mean much to me at the time, but I had heard the
that
name.
That meant that her parents liked Ross
exactly.
Perot.
Exactly. And so I went home and I asked my parents, hey, guys.
What's a Ross Perot?
what's a Perot-y? And they showed me pierogies, and I was like, oh, yum. But I asked, what do you...
And that explains why you're here today.
And here I am.
That's amazing.
But I said, this is the phrase I remember, and this is why I remember the whole incident. I said, guys, or mom, dad, who are you rooting for? And they both, I remember my dad turning to me, and it felt embarrassing. I don't know why, because I would say the same thing today. But he turned to me, and he said, you mean, who am I voting for? We don't root. I was like, okie dokie. I
you just
got
like,
my
just wait till 2020.
Political... Yeah.
just wait. We've got uniforms.
And you felt that big.
Carl, do you have any formative points in your life that made you any more or less interested in politics?
Well, since I'm older than all of you combined, the year was 1976.
He's 123.
Wow.
The year was 1976, and I was going to St. Gabriel the Archangel, and I was on bus 2. And as you got off the bus, you had to put a little piece of paper in either the Ford or Carter box.
No.
Mm.
And I don't even remember who won.
Do you remember having like a thought process as to why one or the other?
Oh, my parents hated Gerald Ford because he pardoned Nixon. Mm. And so I went with Carter, which so did the country.
Interesting stuff.
Let's now we know why.
Yeah, because of
there you go.
Bus number two. Quick break. We're going to come back with Real or Fake when we return. If you got a Real or Fake, you can comment it on the Annie Fry YouTube page. Got a lot of conversation going on there today. Also on the Annie Fry Show Facebook page. Your Real or Fake, our Real or Fake when we come back. Don't go away.
Interact with Annie on Facebook. The Annie Fry Show. This is the Annie Fry Show. Follow Annie on Twitter at Annie Fry Show. You're listening to The Annie Fry Show.
Can you see through that thing? Can you talk through that thing?
It's got mesh.
Does it zip all the way up?
Well, my headphones are in the way of that.
What are you, R2-D2?
I am R2-D2.
Okay.
I never know the difference between... Well, I mean, I know the difference.
One's a trash can.
R2-D2 and C-3PO. I can't ever remember which one is which. Oh, my gosh. You got to be watching us right now on the Facebook Live. Facebook.com/AnnieFryShow. The Annie Fry YouTube page. We actually have R2-D2 appropriately. Beep, boop, beep, boop, beep, boop. That's how I need you to do this entire Real or Fake segment. Just beep, do it in beep boops. It's good that you're running the board. You're appropriately assigned in that capacity.
Thank you.
My goodness. My shirt has spider webs on it. It's what I got, folks. It's what I got.
Ryan's my arch nemesis, Captain Kirk.
I'm sitting here
Are we fighting now? Because I'm not a big Star Wars fan, and I'm willing to admit that.
You can like them both, you know.
No, I don't want to.
Gabe, can you like both Star Wars and Star Trek? What's that? Is that the Punisher?
Punisher.
It is.
And what is the Punisher from? I knew it was the Punisher. That's the extent.
Marvel comics.
Oh, okay.
Which means it's closely
aligned.
Yeah,
he may show up sometimes.
What's
Although
the,
his movie would be rated R, so he wouldn't sell as many toys.
Yeah.
Well, you never know. All right, you guys ready for some Real or Fake?
Ready.
Knock it. Let's get to it here. I'm going to go first, and I can't wait to hear what I know what some of you are going to say. Real or fake news? Polls are trash. Go for it.
Okay, I'll start. That's real news.
Oh, I didn't expect that.
Yeah, no, that's real news, and that's one of the reasons I look into the methodologies and I deep dig so into them so
Since
much.
Since they're trash, I spend all of my time with it.
I try to mine them for actual data instead of taking them for what they are headlined as. So I agree.
Ryan is the Oscar the Grouch of polls.
Yeah,
just living.
Yeah,
it.
It's Gabe, trash, but I live in it.
What do you? Love that, Gabe. What do you think?
That's real news. Yeah, kind of like what Ryan said. It's you know, when you, it's really when you dig into the polls that you realize that it's trash or it's confirmed that it's trash. So yeah, I'm there with you.
Vicky says on our Facebook Live, I love Carl's costume, but does Carl think it's real or fake news? Polls are trash.
That is real news.
Yes.
Thank you, Carl.
That's the trifecta there. Happy to have it. Gabe, why don't love it? Why don't you go next, Gabe?
All right, real or fake news. The fake news media is the enemy of the people.
Real. Yeah. I got so excited. I said the wrong word.
Just a kind of a preamble to that. I used to think that was a little bit of hyperbole, a little too almost. On the edge of kind of, you know, arguably in the dangerous realm. But the thing is, the more I've watched the media, the more and the more blatant they got, the more I realized that that's entirely true.
Ryan, what do you think?
Man, I don't know. I don't want to say that they're the enemy of the people. I mean, I agree with that because I think they're on the wrong side. I just think they're horribly biased. So if they're biased in my favor,
keeping truth from you because they want you to think something else, and they're the ones who are privy to the truth and they are not providing it, that is the opposite of what journalism is supposed to be.
Yeah, I think,
and they're doing it for selfish reasons.
I would have to agree. I mean, I'd have to say mainstream media is real. I'm so thankful that we live in an era. I mean, 10, 20 years ago, nobody would even know about the stories that we're talking about, except that we have now a completely independent internet press that is able to look into these things much, much more than the couple outlets like us and like Fox and so forth that in the past, that was it. You know, I'm so thankful that we're in this time now.
Carl?
I'm going to disagree because Fox News is the mainstream media now, and so is OAN. So
I did say fake news media. I did say fake news media.
Right, but just because you don't agree with it doesn't necessarily mean that all mainstream media is true or false. There are shades of gray.
I've said many times Fox News is a product of the mainstream media news environment. In a capitalistic society, when you see how everything is going, it bore Fox News. And then you see there's only one Fox News out there, and Fox News is changing a little bit. Gives OAN and Newsmax and some of these newer places some room to breathe, of course, but when you see the ratings numbers of Fox News and you compare it to the rest of the news combined, it's Fox News and the rest, and they all have an angle. And when I watch Fox News do news, I think that they do it the most fair that is out there for you to consume. And you just got to know when the news is the news and when the opinions are the opinions. Ryan, what do you think? You're real or fake? Go ahead.
Okay, my real or fake is that with all the talk that this is the most important election of our lifetime, I disagree. It is not the most important election of our lifetime. 2016 was. Real or fake?
Ooh.
I feel like it's always the most important election of your lifetime, and it can be true every time.
That sounds like a cop out.
No, I think it sounds intellectually superior.
Of course.
I do think that it can be true that every election is the most important of your lifetime, and I don't really know that it's gonna not be true. Like I don't know what it's going to look like in 2024 when we do this again and there's no Trump. I mean, the 2016 election changed the way we do elections, but I cannot repeat this enough. Donald Trump is a response. Donald Trump did not come out of nowhere. He was created and manifested by the climate that we were in, by, as he's been saying here recently, Obama and Biden. He is the response to the political culture that was set up, and also a lapdog media that wouldn't challenge Barack Obama on anything. They laughed at Donald Trump when he came on the scene. So, you know, if Hillary Clinton would be president right now, that would be terrible. But if Joe Biden becomes president, I think it's going to be terrible. So I'm going to stick by and say you're half right that 2016 was the most important election of our time until now.
Until now.
Gabe, everyone is special.
Yeah.
Well, everyone gets a trophy.
No,
everybody gets
no
a trophy.
One is special.
Yeah.
I think part of the problem is that every past, like basically the last election is what shaped the current election. So it's kind of like basically every new election is the most important because it's going to shape the future of the country one way or the other. You know, if we were, you know, currently dealing with a President Hillary Clinton, that'd be, you know, one thing. If we had somehow had a president, who the heck was it? Mitt Romney, I guess, who ran against Barack Obama.
It's one of the reasons,
you know, if we had
lost.
Had a Mitt Romney,
that?
A president.
Yeah. Or John McCain.
Yeah, instead of John McCain. Yeah, one of those.
Mm-hmm.
If we had had one of those instead of a Barack Obama, like let's say Barack Obama never actually made it to the presidency. That's a whole different world altogether, right? So, you know, I think each one, every time you have an election, it is the most important. And I think that's why you need to vote.
Okay, Carl, what do you think?
I'm going to say that 2016 was more important because the current president put three people on the Supreme Court, and that is not going to happen within the next 4 to 4.5
Can
years.
Can you imagine
Bingo.
If it did?
That's a compelling combustion. Right there.
Combustion. All right, that's a little split decision. Carl, you got a real or fake for the room?
I do. Republicans and Democrats hate the other side more than they love their own side.
Oh, yes, for real. Yeah. Nobody, I remember, like, back in maybe Tea Party time. You could never be Republican enough or the right kind of Republican for your fellow Republican. Donald Trump has brought that together. He has broadened the tent for sure. But the Democrats now, good grief. If you look at progressives right now as well, there's a checklist and you got to check every box or it's a problem. Although I don't know if Democrats hate their fellow progressives more than they hate Trump, but I don't know that Trump is the same as the Republican Party. But I'm going to say real news. I think that's right, Carl. Gabe, what do you think?
Yeah, I think it's closer to real than fake. For sure, I think the ones who are steering the parties, you know, basically the loudest voices, the most prominent and most influential voices, particularly on the left, are driven mostly by the hatred of Donald Trump in particular, but Republicans in general. You can tell by the way they talk about us. I think it's to a lesser degree on the right, but it still exists where, you know, there's a lot of hatred. I mean, that the anti-Clinton side was pretty vitriolic in some cases. And then, of course, there's the anti-left, faction here, you know, who are more concerned with owning the libs and you know, throwing crap at AOC and the squad than they are at supporting, you know, conservative ideology.
Real quick, Ryan, what do you think?
There might be truth in it, but I'm going to say fake news just because, personally, I believe in conservative principles more than I do candidates or parties, and therefore actually love the ideology more than I do any of the actual things going on right now.
I also think this could be generational, too. Change over time. Real quick, I wanted to get to this one before we wrap up. We can rapid fire this. Real or fake news? The grown-up world of sheet thread counts will greatly impact your quality of life.
Oh, man.
True.
That's real. That's real news.
When you sleep on nice sheets for the first time and not the 200 count Walmart sheets that you got but when you're standing in the aisle to buy sheets and you're like, $70, that's not worth it. So you buy the cheap ones and you're like, you're laying in bed. You're like, it was worth it. It was worth all of it.
Yeah.
And you're just like scratchy and stuff. Yeah. Sheet thread count.
There's nothing about that that's not true.
That's real news.
It's a game changer.
Yeah.
It is. It is a game changer. And I think my mother-in-law, for like our maybe second Christmas after we were married, she got us some nice sheets. And my husband and I were laying on, we're like, what is this? Where has this
Where has
been?
This world existed?
Who are these fancy people with all of these hundreds in their sheet count thread? What is this Egyptian stuff? It was amazing.
I'm just happy when they're clean.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, and then you graduate out of thread count into clean sheets and thread count.
You can clean these?
Yeah, get yourself some high thread count sheets and enjoy every smooth, silky minute of it. We're going to take a quick break.
Treat yourself.
When we come back, more of this discussion, Cassie Smedley with the RNC as well.
You're listening to The Annie Fry Show.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.